Okay, Psalm 119, we're a little bit of over halfway through Psalm 119. We'll read 16 verses, beginning in verse 97. Psalm 119, verses 97 through 112. Oh, how I love your law. It is my meditation all the day. Your commandments make me wiser than my enemies, for they are ever mine. I have more insight than all my teachers, for your testimonies are my meditation. I understand more than the aged, because I have observed your precepts. I have restrained my feet from every evil way, that I may keep your word. I have not turned aside from your ordinances, for you yourself have taught me. How sweet are your words to my taste, yes, sweeter than honey to my mouth. From your precepts I get understanding. Therefore, I hate every false way. And then the favorite part of this for many of us because of the song, your word is a light to my feet and a light to my path, lamp to my feet and a light to my path. I have sworn and I will confirm it that I will keep your righteous ordinances. I am exceedingly afflicted. Revive me, O Lord, according to your word. O accept the free will offerings of my mouth, O Lord, and teach me your ordinances. My life is continually in my hand, yet I have not forgotten your law. The wicked have laid a snare for me, yet I have not gone astray from your precepts. I have inherited your testimonies forever, for they are the joy of my heart. I have inclined my heart to perform your statutes forever, even to the end. Psalm 119, 97 through 112. We'll cover 1 Samuel 20 today, but just as a way of reminder, as we do every week, just a few things from previous weeks. Remember that this story about David, last couple of weeks ago, we covered 1 Samuel 19, and then we had a little sidetrack last week, but that's okay. But this is really about those lines that we had in 1 Samuel 17, that this is the reason for the Goliath story, and this is how David escapes. This is the reason for everything that happens in 1 Samuel, and it's even reminds us of Exodus, and what is said there, that this is so that all the earth may know that there is a God for Israel, and that all of Israel will know, the whole assembly will know, that God does not fight, that the Lord does not fight with swords and spears, because the battle belongs to Him. In chapter 18, then, we found this at the beginning of chapter 18, after the battle of David of Goliath. We had this account where David and Jonathan, Saul's son, become really, really close friends. And it's phrased this way in verse 1. And as soon as he had finished speaking to Saul, that's after David had finished speaking to Saul, after David and Goliath, the soul of Jonathan was bound to the soul of David. We're going to touch on that a little bit today. The soul of Jonathan was bound to the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as his own soul. You might phrase it a little bit differently in your version than that, but because the word that's used here for soul has a much broader meaning than that, and so there's it can mean, it might be phrased differently, stated a little bit differently in your version, but I want to emphasize it here because of today. The soul of Jonathan was bound to the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as his own soul. And then in chapter 19, which it was about the escapes of David, remember God saves not with sword or spear here. When David escapes, just through ordinary human reasoning, when Jonathan talks Saul out of killing David one time, and then David gets, Saul throws a spear at David, and he gets away as well because of a harmful spirit that comes and torments Saul. And then what really could be called the great escape, which is the one where God saves Saul, or saves David through Saul's daughter and the use of an idol. So even the use of an idol, the reason I phrased it the great escape amongst those others is that word escape, this one specific word for escape is used, I think it's six times in that short section of about seven verses. One of those is this, and it's an important as we go into chapter 20 as well. When Saul says to his daughter Michal, "Why have you deceived me thus, and let my enemy go?" That's let David go. "So that he escaped." So the word that's used for escaped, however it's translated in your version, will show up again today. And then he also saved him by having his spirit come upon Saul and all his messengers. So let's pick up in 1 Samuel 20. 1 Samuel 20, verse 1. "Then David fled from Naiot in Ramah." So Naiot in Ramah is the place where David had fled from the presence of Saul that we talked about a few weeks ago. It's like from here it would be down to 41st and Marion. Okay, so he fled that far, and then Saul goes, and that's where Saul prophesies and the other messengers there, and David fled from there. So David fled from there and came and said to Jonathan. So he came, and he likely came back here. So he likely came back right back where, right where he started from, right where he fled from originally. And he came back and he said before Jonathan, "What have I done? What is my guilt? And what is my sin before your father, that he is seeking my life?" So, no real time reference here, but you'll see in a minute that some time has passed since David fled. We just don't know quite how much, assuming that this is all chronological, that this story is the next one that follows. He's back. He makes this statement to Jonathan, and by Jonathan's response, we can see that something has happened in the series of time. We have a little bit of a gap in the time because Jonathan responds this way. And he said to him, "Far from it." Or one of the versions translates it, "Heaven forbid." That kind of a statement. "Far from it" is what ESV says. "Heaven forbid" is the Jewish, the English translation of the Jewish Publication Society. "Heaven forbid, you shall not die." So something has happened here that Jonathan no longer thinks that Saul's trying to kill David. So probably some time has passed. "Behold, my father does nothing, either great or small, without disclosing it to me. And why should my father hide this from me? It is not so." So Jonathan is, some commentators say he's naive here to think that Saul wouldn't be after David to kill him after he's got a history of trying to kill David. But I don't really think that it's Jonathan being totally naive. What I think here is this: he's not looking through things in rose-colored glasses. Sure, Saul has tried to kill David before. Probably some time has passed now. But Saul always tells Jonathan what he's going to do. "My father always tells me what he's going to do. And so I haven't heard this. I just don't see that he's trying to kill you. So he dismisses David's concern. David comes to him saying, "Why is your father trying to kill me?" And Jonathan essentially says, "He's not. If he was, I would know about it." So something has happened. Some time has passed. And so he ends up at the end of verse 2 saying, "It is not so." Or in our language, which actually happens to correspond pretty close to the way the Hebrew would say it, to not, "This is not a thing." Okay? Is this a thing? No, this isn't a thing. Okay? So this is not a thing. And then David vows, or David swears in verse 3, again saying, "Your father knows well," is how ESV says it. A little stronger in some of the other versions, and I think New American Standard has something like, "Your father certainly knows this." I think that's the sense here. "That I have found favor in your eyes." So your dad's not dumb, Jonathan. He knows that you and I are close. He knows that there's a covenant between us. He knows that I have found favor in your eyes. And so he's not going to tell you everything anymore. He thinks, "Do not let Jonathan know, lest he be grieved." So David has gotten much warier here than he was. He's the one that had to be warned before by both Jonathan and Michal that Saul was going to kill him. And now tables have kind of turned. He's become more wary. And Jonathan no longer gets the inside information. That's what David's telling him. "Pay attention, Jonathan. You no longer get the inside information about me. But truly, as Yahweh lives and as your soul lives, there is but a step between me and death." So this is a really interesting part of the discussion between David and Jonathan. First of all, things have flipped. Their understanding of this has turned. And then secondly, this is a place where often when we're dealing with people we know, close friends, whatever, we would say, we're just going to have to agree to disagree. Right? I see it one way, you see it another way. Let's just agree to disagree, and then we'll just... There's a song like that too, isn't there? Anyway, I'm not a good singer, so I won't try it. There's only you and me, and we just disagree, though. That's it. I can say the song. Then Jonathan said to David, "Whatever you say, I will do for you." So, potential conflict between these two friends. And he says, and Jonathan says, to put it back in the terms of chapter 18, "Whatever your soul says, I will do for you." Whatever your soul says. Remember that their souls were bound together. Jonathan's soul was bound to David. And he says, "Whatever's best for you, or whatever way you see it, that's what I'm going to do." So David said to Jonathan, "Behold, tomorrow is the new moon," which is a celebration it was celebrated every month. The beginning of the month was celebrated. "So, behold, tomorrow is the new moon, and I should not fail to sit at the table of the king." Well, he's got a dilemma. David has a dilemma because he is thinking, well, if I show up, I'm probably dead, right? I'm probably going to be killed. But if I don't show up at this place, Saul's going to know that something's up. Saul's going to know that I know, and I'm probably dead, right? So either way, David's got a dilemma here, and he says, I should not fail. That's a good way to put it. To show up at the table of the king, but let me go that I might hide myself in the field until the third day at evening. We'll talk about days later, what's in play there with the new moon in the third day. If your father misses me at all, then say, David earnestly asked leave of me to run to Bethlehem, his city, for there is a yearly sacrifice there for the clan. So what we have here is Saul has apparently established a monthly feast to correspond with the new moon, which would be normal. And he expects his closest relatives and advisors to be there. But it also was common to have yearly family feasts. David is asking for permission to leave the monthly feast of Saul, really to, so he doesn't have to be there, but to go to the family thing. And that might be that's not the first time anybody said they had a family meal to avoid going somewhere else. But usually it works the other way around. I have a commitment. But anyway, David earnestly asked leave of me to run to Bethlehem, his city, for there is a yearly sacrifice there for all the clan. And if he says, okay, here we're getting back to David and Jonathan's perspective again. So David now is recognizing that Jonathan is going to do what he wants, but he says to Jonathan, essentially, if you're right, and if I'm right. So if you're right, this will happen. If I'm right, this will happen. If he says good, that he's gone to the feast, it'll be well for your servant. In other words, things are going to be okay for me. Okay? If you're right, I'll be okay. But if he is angry, as ESV says, or if he gets really angry, or you might want to say if he flips out or blows his top, something along those lines. It's phrased a little stronger than just angry and fits in with the way Saul has behaved in the past. If he blows his top, then we'll know I'm right and he's trying to kill me. And so if he gets really angry, then know that harm is determined by him. Know that he plans to kill me. Therefore, if you know that, okay, we have a covenant, you and I, Jonathan and David. This is what David says because of the covenant that he has with Jonathan that they made earlier. Therefore, deal kindly with your servant, or deal faithfully with your servant, or even as ESV says a little bit later, show your steadfast love for me. Okay, he's going to say, it says it a little bit later in this same kind of a setting. For you have brought your servant into a covenant of Yahweh with you. So pay attention to the covenant. Be faithful to the covenant. Show the kindness you promised me in the covenant. And if there's guilt in me, kill me yourself. Okay? That's what he said. That's what David wants as part of this covenant. If I'm guilty of something, we've made a covenant, you kill me. Okay? Why should you hand me over to your father? If I'm guilty, don't hand me over to your father. We have a covenant. You kill me. So, life and death here. And Jonathan said, far be it from you, or heaven forbid. Right? Same thing, same idea. If I actually find out that it was determined by my father that harm should come to you, wouldn't I tell you? Then David said to Jonathan, who will tell me if your father answers roughly? In other words, if we go out here and we have these two possibilities, and it is your father who flies off the handle if he blows his stack, if he blows up, Who's going to tempt? How is this going to happen? How am I going to know that I need to escape? So who's going to let me know that this happened? And Jonathan said to David, come on, let's go out into the field. So they both go out into the field. Probably a good place for a private conversation, but also a good place for Jonathan to explain his plan. Jonathan's already developed a plan, and he does this, and he said, and Jonathan said to David, the Lord, or Yahweh, God of Israel, be witness. When I have sounded out my father about this time tomorrow or the third day, I'll come back to that, behold, if he is well disposed toward David, shall I not then send and disclose it to you? So if he says good, I'll let you know personally. That's plan A. So back to this, why tomorrow or the third day? Somebody else has some new, I think it's NIV says something different. Day after tomorrow. So I will, about this time tomorrow or the third day. Because this is a whole counting thing. So, by the way, don't forget to turn in your library books. When does tomorrow start? At dark. Right? So if I say it's today, tomorrow, when we get out of church, it'll get me out of church when we get out of, it'll be tomorrow when we get out of church that starts at 6. It'll be tomorrow. That starts at 6 p.m. Because I looked at it ahead of time. It's sunset is 5:32 tonight. So, and the day started at dark, which would be a little bit later. You can shoot till a half hour after dark. So after sunset. So that's dark in my world. Dark is a half hour after sunset. So that's when the next day starts, right? So tomorrow starts at dark. And then it runs how long?
Till dark on Monday, right? Dark.
So, in the way of counting here, tomorrow is here, right? Between here, today is here, the third day is here, and the Tuesday. So NIV is picking up on this. They've got it figured out. That since this is Sunday, it's today, and their way of counting, this is day one. Today is one. Tomorrow is day two. Tuesday is day three. So Tuesday right now, if we're standing here today, Tuesday is the third day.
Actually, Monday night is the third day. Starts Monday night.
So that's the way of counting. Where it says today or tomorrow, after dark tonight, or the third day, after dark on Monday, or anytime Tuesday, till dark. So that's what he's talking about. NIV picks up on it, turns it into our way of thinking, day after tomorrow. Okay? Behold, if he is well disposed towards David, then shall I not disclose it to you. So that's what he'll do on plan A. But should it please my father to do you harm, the Lord do so to Jonathan and also more. That's a way of cursing himself. If I do not disclose it to you and send you away. So that'll be plan B. Plan A will be I'll disclose it to you. Plan B will be I'm going to send you away if he's going to kill you, that you may go in safety. And then he says at the end of verse 13, and may the Lord be with you, as he has been with my father. If I am still alive, show me the steadfast love of the Lord that I may not die, and do not cut off your steadfast love from my house forever, when the Lord cuts off every one of the enemies of David from the face of the earth." So there are a few things are going on right here in this little section between the end of verse 13 and actually a couple more verses. I'll read those as well. Start 16 and 17. "And Jonathan made a covenant with the house of David, saying, 'May the Lord take vengeance on David's enemies.' And Jonathan made David swear again by his love for him, for he loved him as he loved his own soul." His own life or soul. So a few things are going on here. First of all, I'm going to back up to the end of verse 13, last couple of lines in the last couple of clauses. "May the Lord be with you, as he has been with my father." The most of the versions we have say something really close to that, but the Jewish translation of this in English, I think, captures the meaning and what several commentaries pointed out as well. What he's really saying here, Jonathan realizes that something has happened with his father. Actually, many of his advisors know that the Spirit of God has left him, and he's been given a harmful spirit. And here's the way that the Jewish translation says this: "May the Lord be with you as he used to be with my father." So Jonathan is saying, "I realize that my father has lost it as king, and may he be with you like he used to be when my father had it, had the Spirit of God." Okay? He's acknowledging, one of the things he's doing here is acknowledging all through this passage that David is going to be king, and by the way, I'm the heir, supposed to be. I'm relinquishing that to you. That's what Jonathan's doing. You be the king. So may the Lord be with you like he was with my father. And if I'm still alive, okay, when you're king, okay, when we meet again, if I'm still alive, show me the steadfast love of the Lord. That's covenant language, like we just talked about a little earlier. Faithfulness to the covenant, the love that God has towards us and towards his people Israel as part of the covenant. Show me the steadfast love of the Lord that I may not die. Because if I'm right, this is probably goodbye until Dad dies. And if I happen to be alive, do not cut off your steadfast love from my house forever, when Yahweh, or the Lord, cuts off every one of his enemies from David. So it would be normal, then, if David becomes king, to kill Jonathan. And so this is what he's saying to him: act faithfully to me with our covenant, and when you're king, don't kill me. If I'm still alive, if I happen to be alive still, don't kill me. Okay? I've been faithful to you, you be faithful to me. And when the Lord takes vengeance on all of your enemies, which is what happens when the king comes, the king appeals to the Lord, and usually the king's enemies die and the previous line dies. So don't kill me, please. And David made a covenant with the house of, or Jonathan made a covenant with the house of David, verse 16, "May the Lord take vengeance on David's enemies." And so Jonathan made David swear again by his love for him, for he loved him as he loved his own soul. So that's what's going on with the covenant. Jonathan's turning this over, turning the kingdom over to David, and he's also saying, you know, this could be goodbye. If you're right and Saul's trying to kill me or trying to kill you, this could be goodbye because I'm going to send you away. That's plan B. We're going to send you away. And then Jonathan said to him, okay, back to the new moon. Tomorrow is the new moon. And you will be missed because your seat will be empty. So he's got an assigned seat. David's got an assigned seat that will be empty. And on the third day, so there we go, on Tuesday after dark on Monday night, sometime during the next day, day after tomorrow, it might say in NIV, tomorrow's the new moon, and you will be missed, your seat will be empty, and on the third day, go down quickly to the place where you hid yourself when the matter was at hand. Oh, okay, let's figure out what that is. So, and remain there beside the stone heap. The ESV says stone heap. Somebody says like the stone of the Ezel stone. That word probably means Ezel. Some think it's a proper noun, but it probably means like the leftover pieces when you make something out of stone. So a pile of those by the stone heap is what ESV is picking up. There's a place where they cut stones, possibly, and then there might be a pile of stones there, the leftover pieces. Okay, so go there, remain there, and I will shoot three arrows to the side of it, as though I shot at a mark or a target. And behold, I will send the boy, saying, "Go find the arrows." So we've got plan A and plan B. And if I say to the boy, or if I specifically say to the boy, that's what New American Standard says. I think it's, again, got it right here. If I specifically say to the boy, because what's coming up next is code words, okay? If I say these words to you, we're on plan A. We're doing plan A. If I say, look, the arrows are on this side of you. Take them. So those are the code words. Anybody in here football fans? Some are. I know some are. I know mostly Vikings fans, but have you heard of Peyton Manning? It got really famous at the end of his career. What does he say when he's about to run the play? Omaha! Okay, everybody, his players knew when he says Omaha, Omaha, something's about to happen here, right? So these are the code words for plan A, right? Like that. If I say this, look, the arrows are on the side of you, take them. I won't be talking to you. That's like saying Omaha. And then you, David, are to come, for as the Lord lives, it is safe for you. And there is no danger. It is safe for you, and it's not a thing. Okay? There's no big deal here. You can come back. So if I say those words to you, so don't mix them up. Don't say, St. Louis or something. Say Omaha. But if I say to the youth, look, the arrows are behind you. Okay, here's the other, another football analogy for you. So nowadays, because things are so complex, most quarterbacks and most teams in the huddle call two plays. You realize that? You see that in the NFL? They call two plays, right? So what do they say? You hear it all the time now. If they're going to plan B. Kill, kill. There you go. You got it. Kill, kill. That means we're not doing that the first play. We're doing the second play. Okay? So here are the key words for the second play. The second play is, look, the arrows are past you. They're beyond you. So they're not beside you. They're past you. So he's yelling at the boy. If he yells at the boy, the arrows are beyond you. What does that mean to David? That means, then go, for the Lord has sent you on the way. So that's the key for plan B. And as for the thing of which we have spoken, that's the covenant, not to kill me. That's the covenant we just made. As for the thing of which you and I have spoken, behold, the Lord is between you and me forever. In other words, we've made this covenant in the Lord's name, and he's the one that's going to watch it. So don't forget not to kill me, because the Lord is watching between you and me. That kind of an idea there. He's between us forever. That's what we have spoken about. So David hid himself in the field, and when the new moon came, the king sat down to eat food. And the king sat on his seat, as at other times, on the seat by the wall. Jonathan sat opposite, and Abner, that's the general, right, sat by Saul's side. But David's place was empty. And Saul didn't say anything that day, for he thought something has happened to him. He is not clean. Surely he is not clean. Remember that in Jewish society back then, even now, a lot of things could make you unclean, and then you wouldn't be able to do ritual things. And so something has happened with David that he's unclean. At least that's what Saul thinks. But on the second day, the day after the new moon, the new moon feasts. Does anybody know what a new moon looks like? Pardon? There isn't one. We think of it as dark, at least for most of the night, when there isn't a new moon. The new moon, and sometimes there's just a tiny sliver, and there isn't a day when it's completely dark all the time, all night long. So these feasts sometimes went on for 2 days, okay, until you could see the first little sliver of the moon. Okay, so it might be 1 day, or it might be 2 days. Sometimes the new moon, there's just a little tiny sliver that you can see when we think it might be totally black. Okay, so anyway, if it was a one day when you could see the sliver, there wouldn't be a second day. But if there wasn't, there would be. So it's a new moon. So the second day, but on the second day, the day after the new moon, or the day that the first little sliver appears, David's place was empty. So it happened twice. And Saul said to Jonathan, his son, which is why Jonathan said, let's wait till day three to see what's, to let you know. Okay, so both days, he would know about both days. But on the second day, after the new moon, David's place was empty. And Saul said to Jonathan, his son, why has not the son of Jesse come to the meal, either yesterday or today? And Jonathan answered Saul, David earnestly asked me to go to Bethlehem. He said, let me go, for our clan holds a sacrifice in the city, and my brother has commanded me to be there. So now, if I have found favor in your eyes, let me get away and see my brother. First of all, I think the older brother should always be able to call a feast. But secondly, the last line that I read, let me get away and see my brothers. Jonathan tells David Jonathan tells Saul in the same words that Saul mentioned to Michal, why did you let my enemy go so that he could escape? Now, if I have found favor in your eyes, middle of verse 29, let me escape and see my brothers. Okay? Let me escape and see my brothers. For this reason, he has not come to the king's table. So the language here that Jonathan answers back in at least makes us know that Saul knows what he's talking about. And Saul is not fooled for a second. And Saul's anger was kindled against Jonathan, and he said to him, You son of a perverse, rebellious woman. She probably wasn't at the feast, but... You son of a perverse, rebellious woman, do I not know that you are choosing, New American Standard there, that you are choosing the son of Jesse to your own shame and to the shame of your mother's nakedness. A little bit of ironic writing there, considering the end of chapter 19, where Saul was at the end of chapter 19, lying naked on the ground. But anyway, Saul, he's starting to get angry with Jonathan. For as long as the son of Jesse lives, verse 31, on the earth, neither you nor your kingdom shall be established. Therefore, send and bring him, for he shall surely die. So all the cards are on the table now, right? Everybody knows what's going on. Jonathan, except for this, Saul doesn't really know that not having his kingdom established is a big deal to Jonathan yet. It's not a big deal right now because he's already given it up. So he's already relinquished the throne. But in this way, the cards are on the table. Saul tells Jonathan that David is going to die. And then Jonathan answers similarly to the way David asked him at the beginning of the chapter. Why should he be put to death? What has he done? And then it becomes clear that it's time to go to plan B, verse 33. But Saul hurled his spear at him to strike him. So now Saul has given Jonathan the same treatment that he gave David, but again, he missed. So Jonathan knew that his father was determined to put David to death. So clear that plan B is in effect now. And Jonathan rose from the table in fierce anger and ate no food the second day of the month, for he was grieved for David because his father had disgraced him. It's interesting, the discussion about verse 34. Not that it really matters a great deal here, but who had the father disgraced? It's a little bit ambiguous. The father had disgraced either David or Jonathan, or both, actually, right? That's kind of a... But what the text refers to isn't really clear. If it has to do with attacking, disgracing David or disgracing Jonathan, because he does both. Some versions make a judgment there and put David's name in it, or make it clear that it's David that they think is being disgraced. Both works. Either one works. In the morning, Jonathan went out into the field to the appointment with David, and with him a little boy. And he said to the boy, run and find the arrows that I shoot, or I'm about to shoot, or I'm shooting. And the boy ran, and he shot an arrow beyond him. I've been to hunter safety course. That wouldn't be a good idea, right? And you don't shoot over somebody when they're running. Probably a bad idea. But Jonathan did that. And when the boy came to the place of the arrow that Jonathan had shot, Jonathan called out after the boy and said, is the arrow not beyond you? Okay, those are the key words. They're the code words that he says. And Jonathan called after the boy, hurry, be quick, do not stay. That wasn't part of the thing that he was going to say, but he did say the key words. He did say, we're going to plan B. First play's dead. Second play is here. This is about getting you out of here. So Jonathan's boy gathered up the arrows and came to his master. But the boy knew nothing. Only Jonathan and David knew the thing. knew the matter. And Jonathan gave his weapons to his boy and said to him, go and carry them to the city. So Jonathan thinks it's safe enough that he doesn't have to just send David away without seeing him. So he does this. And as soon as the boy had gone, David rose from beside the stone heap and fell on his face to the ground and bowed three times. So David is respecting. This is a sign of respect also for the current government as it is in place with Saul. He is anointed, and we're going to see that in the next few chapters, that David, though he questions Saul, and though he is, and though Saul is his enemy, and though Saul is trying to kill him, and David isn't afraid to question that, he still respects the anointing that God has given Saul and the existing government that's in place. Sometimes that's a challenge for us, right? But we are, nobody's trying to kill us right now, but we're in a similar place often in our country, I remember not very long ago we were thinking, man, if we could just get to 2016 and get a new president, we'd have it made, right? So it wasn't very long ago we were doing that, but doesn't matter. The established, yes. The way that I read this and understand it, there isn't, I don't know if there's a consensus on that. I do think that it was simply this. Jonathan thought he might be watched very closely, and he needed to find a way to warn David. And shooting, notice at the beginning, it doesn't mention it here at the end, but he was going to shoot three arrows. I have read a little bit about this. Some people think, well, if he's only going to shoot one, it looks like a sign. Send somebody out to shoot one arrow. Well, now it looks like he's target practicing, right? So under the assumption that he's going to be watched, he's going to shoot the three arrows and then yell this out. But apparently he feels comfortable enough that there's nobody watching that he sends the boy off, and then David feels comfortable to get out from his cover, and Jonathan feels comfortable that, hey, I'm not being watched. This is going to be okay. I can go talk to him. That's what it looks like mostly. So that's the way I read it anyway. So he bows three times, and they kissed one another and wept with one another, David weeping the most. So again, David is showing great respect for Jonathan and great love for Jonathan as well. Then Jonathan said to David, go in peace, because we have sworn both of us in the name of the Lord, saying, the Lord shall be between you and me, and between my offspring and your offspring forever. So there's a little bit more given to this covenant, a little bit more substance than was evident before. But he's saying, even though you're going to be king, my offspring and your offspring, there's a covenant between not only me, but anybody else that comes in the family, between our families, that you, David, need to respect. I will, and you need to as well, forever. And he rose and departed, and Jonathan went into the city. We're almost out of time, but again, God delivers David again, but it's not again by weapons, right? Okay, in this case. It is, in this case, by loyalty and by steadfast love, by loyalty and a covenant that they make. So time after time, God is delivering David, and he's still letting us know that it's not all about weapons, as we heard this morning in our sermon. It's not all about the weapons. It's not about the flesh. God has other ways of doing things, which require our involvement. Jonathan and David, their covenant they have. So another in the long line here of coming escapes by David, actually Lord delivering David from Saul's hand. So that's time, and we will see you all next week.